your Bibles to the book of Judges, if you would, please. Judges chapter 13. I told you this morning that Samson is the counterpart of John the Baptist. John the Baptist was called of God before birth, and it was pronounced that he would be a Nazarite, and we see the same thing in the life of Samson, but we see two opposite ends of the story. The story ends exactly opposite for both men. If you'll notice in chapter 13 of the book of Judges, we'll begin here by saying, "The children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of the Philistines 40 years. And there was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared to the woman and said unto her, Behold, now thou art barren and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son. Now therefore beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, nor eat not any unclean thing. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son. No razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines." By the way, he never did that. He didn't deliver the children of Israel, not even a little bit, really. Samuel still had to deal with them. David still had to deal with them. Well, then the woman came and told her husband, saying, "A man of God," and she didn't realize this was an angel, "a man of God came to me, and his countenance was like the countenance of an angel of God, very terrible. And I asked him not whence he was, neither told he me his name. But he said unto me, Behold, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and now drink no wine nor strong drink, neither eat any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite to God from the womb to the day of his death." Now this is a good thing. Manoah said, entreated the Lord, and said, "O my Lord, let the man of God which thou didst send come again to us to teach us what shall be done to the child that shall be born." Here's a man who prayed, "Lord, come, send the angel back. Send this man back again so that we can know what it is that we need to do to raise this boy." But obviously they didn't raise him the way Zacharias raised John the Baptist, because Samson, and outside of their long hair and outside of their being a Nazarite, Samson and John the Baptist bore little resemblance in their life, what they accomplished in their life, and so forth. Now, I told you this morning we were going to call this message Mistakes That Strong Men Make. The first thing I want you to understand is that Samson was a strong man in body, and he was a strong man in will. He was not a strong man in spirit. He was not nearly as spiritual as he needed to be. To my knowledge, there's only one prayer recorded that Samson prayed, and that's after he's had his eyes put out. And that's prior to the time that he commits suicide by pushing down the pillars of the temple of Dagon and taking his own life as he takes the life of a couple of thousand Philistines with him. That's the only prayer he ever prayed. That's not a spiritual man. Now, the Spirit of God did come on him several times, but you'll see in the end, he kind of missed the main point of what God called him to do. So Samson was a strong man in body. He was a strong man in willpower. There are many strong-willed men in this world, but that does not mean they're strong spiritually. So bear in mind that when we're talking about strong men, it's not necessarily a complimentary thing that we're talking about. Now, you might be sitting there tonight saying, "Well, I am kind of a strong-willed guy." Well, then maybe this is going to talk to you. But we're not talking necessarily spiritual strength. We're talking strength of will, strength of body. Samson failed to fulfill his God-given potential because of these tendencies. Now, I call them mistakes. The book that I'm going to show you this evening, and basically my message is going to be kind of a book review. And he calls this tendencies that strong men have. In other words, not every strong man has every one of these 12 tendencies that I call mistakes. They are mistakes. Make no mistake about it. They are mistakes. If you commit the same infractions that Samson committed in his life, it is a mistake, and you could even call it a sin. But these are mistakes that strong men make. They are tendencies that strong men have. But it doesn't mean that every strong man has every one of these tendencies. I told you this morning about Nathan giving this book to one of the gentlemen in his church, and his wife began to read a chapter a night to him at bedtime. And he called Nathan up about four chapters in and said, "Did you give this to me to be an encouragement?" He said, I can hardly go to sleep for being under conviction. Are you my friend or my enemy? And Nathan just quoted the passage in Proverbs to him, "The kisses of an enemy are sweet, but faithful are the wounds of a friend." And so the guy said, "Well," he said, "so far I'm guilty on 4 out of 4. I think by the time the book was finished, he hit on 10 out of 12. And anyway, you may have one or two of these, and you may say, "Well, that's not a problem with me." But you know what? Even one of these things, if you identify with one of these things, it could be a problem in your life. So Samson failed to fulfill his God-given potential because of these tendencies, and other strong men besides Samson will fail for these same reasons. Now, understand, when we're talking about strong men, we're probably not talking about spiritual strength. We're talking about strong-willed men who are used to getting their way. And you know what? This country was built by strong men. I understand that. And when your strength of conscience is tempered by the Word of God and by principle, that can be a wonderful thing. But often our strength of will is revolving around ourselves and what I want, and that's not a wonderful thing. Okay, so I'm ready to launch into this. There's 12 points I've got to get going if we're going to get them all covered. Number one, if you're taking notes, or you can buy the CD, or you can go online and get it later, but I'm going to have to keep moving. Number one, strong men tend to disregard boundaries. Strong men tend to disregard boundaries. In chapter 13 and verse 5, we read the angel gave the instructions. He's not to have a razor on his head. He's not to drink strong drink or wine. And he is not to touch anything or eat anything unclean. And that goes for you too, because during the time that you carry him in your body, he could be defiled even now. And so there are rules here. The Nazarite vows were given to him. The Nazarite vows meant that they were to abstain from the fruit of the vine. I told you this morning, the fruit of the vine symbolizes the pleasures of this world. The man who's going to be spiritually right with God needs to not find his pleasure in the pleasures of this world. We need to find our joy and our pleasures in pleasing the Lord. Number two, he's to abstain from cutting his hair. Long hair brings a reproach from other men. It's always been that way. It always will be that way. God intended ladies' hair to be long, men's hair to be short. And so when a man wears long hair, other men, there's a reproach brought upon him. But the symbolism here is that as a Nazarite, I'm willing to bear the reproach of men for the cause of Christ. And you know what? You should be willing to do that too. Number three, he's to abstain from touching dead bodies, because that was uncleanness in the sight of God. And that was chapter 14 and verse 9 that he did that. By the way, I want you to understand, he broke every one of these rules. He disregarded every one of these boundaries. As far as the pleasures of the world, he spent a week at a wedding party where wine was running like a river. As far as cutting his hair in the end, in chapter 16 and verse 17, of course, he gave Delilah the secret. She cut his hair, and that part of his Nazarite vow was spoiled. And when he touched the body of the dead lion, he disregarded that boundary as well. Now, let me say this, and this is said in the book, and I'm not going to take the time to give you the illustrations, but ignoring boundaries will shackle you. Ignoring boundaries leads to shackles, and also ignoring boundaries leads to shame. It will shame you. Now, the book is full of a number of good illustrations. I mean, taken from sports, taken from hunting and fishing, taken from politics. You want to get a copy of this book, fellas, and read these illustrations. They will strengthen you. But just remember this, strong men tend to disregard boundaries. Number two, strong men tend to struggle with lust. You know what makes men physically strong? Usually it's hormones, testosterone. What do you think the guys get in trouble for with these steroids? The guys trying to increase their muscle mass and increase their strength level so that they can hit the ball 25 feet farther. The guys that try to make themselves bigger so that when they go to run the ball, they're harder to tackle. the guys taking these steroids, the guys that it makes their muscles heal quicker and so forth. Do you know what that also does? It makes a guy more sexually active. Strong men tend to struggle with lust. The very same thing that makes a man physically strong also makes him attracted to the opposite sex. I don't know of any better way to say it than that. Did you realize that nearly every episode in Samson's life revolves around a woman? He just went really from one woman to another woman to another woman to another woman. He tried one woman, and his father pleaded with him, don't do this, but he did it anyway. And then that ended badly, and then he got to longing for her, and he went back again. And it wasn't long before he was in a place called Gaza, laying with a woman at midnight, and they tried to arrest him, and he carried away the gates of the city. And then finally, the barber of Sorek, Delilah by name, ended up cutting off his hair. Nearly every episode in Samson's life revolved around a woman. He just couldn't stay away from the lady folk. Let me say this, and we'll move on to the next thing. Lust causes you to ignore spiritual considerations. It's hard to have lust burning in your flesh. It's hard to have the flesh set on fire and be thinking about the things of God all at the same time. It's really hard. As a matter of fact, I think it's impossible. Lust causes you to ignore spiritual considerations. It'll also cause you to miss God's plan because you're thinking about something other than God's plan. And so strong men tend to struggle with lust. Here's number three. Strong men tend to ignore good advice. Look at chapter 14 and verse 3. Now, I'm going to read the first three verses for you because we haven't read this already. Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said unto him, Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. Get her for me, she pleaseth me well. There you see a little bit of his lust, but you also see that he's ignoring good advice. Here's a dad and a mother pleading with him, Don't do this. You're an Israelite. She's a Philistine. You're circumcised, the Philistines are uncircumcised. You're part of Abraham's covenant, the Philistines are not part of the covenant. How can you expect this to work well? Isn't there a woman from among our people who are believers in Jehovah that you can hook up with who would make you a better wife than this uncircumcised Philistine? I don't care what you said. Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. I want you to know that as he's ignoring their good advice, I truthfully think they had unwittingly spoiled him. There were two things that were a combination. Number one, he was an only child. He was a child of their old age. But number two, his parents knew in advance that God had plans for his life. And I think they just thought everything would be okay. And you know what? Since God has plans for him, we'll kind of pamper him and give him what he wants. You can tell by looking at Samson's life that he was a man who was used to getting what he wanted. And he knew how to get what he wanted. And so I want you to understand this about great men. Great men, number one, covet good advice. Great men covet good advice. Number two, great men choose good advisors. I was talking with a guy one time who was thinking about breaking up his marriage. And I said, and he was telling me some things that a friend had told him. And I said, who is this friend? And he said, well, he's a friend. He's a friend at work. I said, well, has he been, he's been divorced. He knows exactly about it. I said, and you're getting advice from him? How many times has he been divorced? Oh, twice. I said, you're talking to a three-time, he's already been divorced twice, he's now married to another woman, and you're getting advice from him on whether you ought to save your marriage or not. You know, you need to get advice from good resources. And listen, if you're thinking my marriage is on the rocks, don't go to a person that's been married three times. Talk to Miss Elsie. She'll give you a lot better counsel than you'll get from some lady who listens to all of the soap operas every afternoon. You know, where Jane is She can't make up her mind between, you know, Barry and Fred. And, you know, Fred's got money, but Barry's young and handsome. And in the meantime, she doesn't know it, but Barry's got an affair going with. You're going to get advice. You need to get advice from somebody that goes to church three times a week. You need to get advice from somebody that reads their Bible every day. You need to get advice from somebody whose marriage is still intact. You need to get advice from somebody who knows how to walk with the Lord. Good men get advice from good counselors. They covet good advice and they choose good advisors. So, number one, strong men tend to disregard boundaries. I wonder how many boundaries you might have disregarded in your life. Strong men tend to struggle with lust. I wonder how many struggle with lust. Strong men tend to ignore good advice. I wonder how many guys do that. Number four, strong men tend to break the rules. Look in chapter 14, verse 5. Then went Samson down and his father and his mother to Timnath and came to the vineyards of Timnath. And behold, a young lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. And he rent him as he would have rent a kid. That is, he grabbed him by the jaw and just like literally tore him apart. He had nothing in his hand, but he told not his father or mother what he had done. And he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. And after a time, he returned to take her. He turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of a lion. And he took therefore in his hands and went on eating and came to his father and mother, and he gave them, and they did eat, but he told them not that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Now, you know what? Samson knew this is against the rules. I'm a Nazirite, not supposed to touch a dead body. Oh, I'll just take a stick and I'll see how close I can get without actually touching it. Well, strong men break rules. One man said this. he said, if a man breaks a rule and no one saw him do it, did it happen? If a man breaks a rule and nobody saw him do it, did it happen? You know, that comes off of the statement, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, did it make a noise? Well, that's a philosophical question you're going to have to answer somewhere else. But, you know, the kind of question there that if a man breaks a rule and no one saw him do it, did it happen? You, that would be the kind of question that Bill Clinton would have asked. You know, I'm just going to give you some of the names that were suggested here in the book. Bill Clinton had an affair with one of his staff members. He broke the rules. Jim Baker was imprisoned. He ruined his ministry and was imprisoned for fraud. Pete Rose missed being in the Hall of Fame for gambling. Everybody knows Pete Rose was one of the greatest ballplayers that ever played. If anybody's in the Hall of Fame, Pete Rose should be there, except for the fact that he gambled on games in which he played. Jimmy Swaggart was caught in a car with a prostitute. He broke the rules. Jesse Jackson sired an illegitimate child. He broke the rules. Mike Tyson bit a guy's ear off in a boxing match. He cheated. He broke the rules. Willie Nelson put in jail for tax evasion. Kent Hovind, who battles evolution and who is a well-known creationist but evaded taxes, was put in prison. Ben Johnson stripped of a gold medal because of taking steroids. Listen, there are rules in life, and the rules are there for reasons. But strong men always think, I can get away with this. I'm the guy who can break the rules and not get caught. Or I'm the guy who can break the rules and make it work anyway. Let me give you three things about rules. These all came from the book. Number one, rules protect us from trouble. Rules keep you out of trouble. Number two, rules shape us into better men. There are certain standards of life that we need to conform to. Rules are those standards. They will help us be better men. Number three, they're a really good way to tell how well we're doing. Rules show us how well we are doing. So number four, strong men tend to break rules. Are you ready for number five? Strong men tend to overestimate their own cleverness. Now, Samson's in love with this Philistine girl. And he won't listen to his father's advice nor his mother's advice, so he goes down to Timnath and he decides to marry her anyway, and his father finally gives in and goes along with it, verse 10 of chapter 14. Verse 10 of chapter 14, so his father went down unto the woman, and Samson made there a feast for so used the young men to do. Now, if you study the culture, these wedding feasts lasted over a week. For at least 8 days, they're wining and dining and eating and wining and dining and jesting in their athletic events, and it's a whole big deal. And so used the young men to do. And it came to pass when they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. In other words, these guys are groomsmen. Now, Karen's getting ready to get married next week, and I think she has four groomsmen and four bridesmaids. Samson had 30 guys standing up with him. It took a big church lobby a big church platform to have had all 30 guys stand up with him. These 30 guys are going to be his companions. And Samson said unto them, I will now put forth a riddle. Remember, these guys are not friends. These guys are Philistines. These guys are enemies. They're not circumcised. They don't love the Lord, and they really don't like Samson. But they're going to stand up with him in his wedding anyway. And he says, I'll put forth a riddle. If you can, certainly declare it to me within 7 days of the feast and find it out, and I will give you 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. Now, the sheets there is really shirts, if you read in the margin. But if you cannot declare it to me, then you give me 30 shirts or sheets and 30 change of garments. And they said unto him, put forth thy riddle that we may hear it. Now, listen to how clever Samson thinks he is. He's overestimating his cleverness. Out of the eater came forth meat, out of the strong came forth sweetness, and they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they came to Samson's wife. And here's what they ended up telling Samson's wife. You either find out from him what the answer to this riddle is, because we're not going to pay him 30 changes of raiment. We're not giving him 30 shirts, and we're not giving him 30 changes of raiment. You either figure this out, you get out of him what this answer to this riddle is, or we're going to kill you and your father's household. Wow, now those are friends, aren't they? But you know what? Samson thinks he's so clever. Most strong men do. And he thinks he's so clever that his enemies can't figure this out. Well, I want you to understand, he overestimated his own brilliance, and he overestimated his enemy's integrity. He never thought about the enemy cheating. You know, look, if I'm a Jew boy down in Philistine territory, I figure they're going to cheat at any game we play. That's what I'm going to think. I wouldn't trust them as far as my dad used to say, as far as I could throw a bull by the tail. You ever try to throw a bull by the tail? Get that old 2,500-pound bull out there or 3,000-pound bull and grab him by the tail and twirl him around in the air and then give him a launch. See how far you can throw him. Dad said that's exactly how far I'd trust certain people. and that's how far I would have trusted these Philistines. You know, if you're in a game with a Philistine, expect him to cheat. That's what Philistines do. By the way, that's what a lot of people in the world do. He underestimated their resolve to win. He didn't know, he didn't even stop to think how desperate they would get and what they might stoop to do to figure out his secret. Now, let me give you some enemies of discernment. What Samson lacked here was discernment. These are seven enemies. I think there are others, but these are seven enemies that the book gets, enemies of discernment. Enemy number one is pride. Pride will cloud your vision. Number two, liquor. Samson was partaking of the fruit of the vine in a week-long episode of wining and dining for his wedding, and that'll cloud your mind every time. Anger will cloud your mind. Can't think straight if you're mad. I remember I used to watch Saturday Night Wrestling with my dad, and there was one wrestler that was famous for this. If the guy was bigger than him, I mean, he'd come out, and you know what the first thing he'd do is reach out and just slap him with his open hand right upside of the head. And the guy would, he'd get mad, and he'd pull his hair and mess his hair all up, and he'd get so mad, and then this little guy would just go around him like a termite in a yo-yo. I mean, he just would up and down, all around. He was just, he'd crawl all over the guy, beat him half to death. But it all started because he'd slap him upside of the head and get him mad. Anger will cloud your judgment. Lust will cloud your judgment. Samson's judgment was clouded half the time because of his eyes were on the women folk. Greed will cloud your judgment. Hatred will cloud your judgment. Impatience is number seven. That'll cloud your judgment. You want to see somebody whose judgment wasn't clouded, you look at the life of Joseph. Joseph had some secrets of discernment. Number one, he looked all around and saw how good God had been to him. He saw his blessings. Number two, he looked within and he realized, my integrity is at stake. If no one else has to sleep with me, I have to sleep with me. My dad used to say, before I go to bed at night, I look in the mirror and I want to know I'm sleeping with an honest man. That's not a bad exercise to have. Look in the mirror each night and make sure you're going to bed with an honest man. I'm talking about yourself. Number three, he looked ahead. He saw the future. He saw, there's no way this is going to turn out good. If I commit iniquity with the Potiphar's wife, is she going to leave Potiphar and move in with me? Is she going to actually do that? Is there any way this is going to turn out good? No. And then he looked above and he said, how can I sin against God? You can't do this. Listen, that's the way to keep your discernment clear. But you want to cloud your judgment, partake in those other things. So we have disregarding boundaries, struggling with lust, ignoring good advice, breaking the rules, overestimating cleverness. Here's number six, strong men use anger as a tool. Judges 14 and verses 18 and 19. And the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? See, they had found out through his wife, they had found out the secret to his riddle. So now he owes them 30 changes of clothes. And he said unto them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, ye had not found out my riddle. He understood where they found the answer to this riddle because she had begged and begged and begged till he told her. Notice verse 19, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and he went down to Ashkelon and slew 30 men of them and took their spoil and gave change of garments to them which expounded the riddle. But notice this, and his anger was kindled and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion whom he had used as his friend. Strong men use anger as a tool. In the book, this gentleman describes how anger is addictive. You know why it's addictive? Because it gives you an adrenaline rush to see other people cowering under your temper fit. When you get mad and blow your top and you see the room begin to clear and people set up and mouths drop open and eyes pop and everybody is afraid and you can see that I have actually intimidated everybody in this room, there is an adrenaline flow that is unbelievable. And also, it got him what he wanted. There's a lot of men that get what they want, and they get it by blowing their top. Anger's addictive. Anger must be intensified to maintain its effectiveness. After a while, people get used to your temper fits. So they kind of get used to it so they don't react to it. So you know what? You got to keep getting madder to get the same effect. What you don't realize, number three, is that anger has collateral damage. Little children, your wife, everybody you dump on, everybody that you unload anger on, there's piles and piles of collateral damage there. People that are grieved by you using anger as a tool. And then, fourthly, anger stunts your spiritual growth. Why do you think that the Scripture says, grieve not the Holy Spirit, and then in the very next verse, it tells us six different levels of anger that would grieve the Holy Spirit? The connection is that if you want to grieve the Holy Spirit, be angry. And there's six different ways to be angry. And the trouble is, a lot of folks only think that anger is involved when you get mad and kick a hole in a hollow core door or punch your fist through some drywall. There's five other levels of anger besides that. You need to research those and understand that strong men use anger as a tool. Number seven, strong men tend to repeat the same mistakes. Look at chapter 15, verses 1 through 8. It came to pass within a while, in the time of wheat harvest, that Samson visited his wife with a kid. Now remember, he left. She told his riddle. He had to get 30 changes of garment to pay his gambling bills because he had overestimated his cleverness. Now he's killed 30 guys out of anger. He left town because of anger, but now he's decided, you know what, I want to go back up there and honey up to my sweetheart. So he says, I'm going to go back up and see her after the wheat harvest. He visited his wife with a kid. By the way, that's a goat, not a little child. It's a peace offering, so to speak. And he said, I will go into my wife into the chamber. Now, what do you think he had on his mind? You think he was going back up and saying, I actually want to reconcile with this lady? That isn't the way it sounds, is it? He was wanting to visit her chamber. But her father would not suffer him to go in. And her father said, I verily thought thou hadst utterly hated her, therefore I gave her to thy companion. Is not her younger sister fairer than she? Take her, I pray thee, instead. And Samson said concerning them, now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure. And Samson went and caught 300 foxes and took firebrands. By the way, catching one fox is a pretty fair afternoon's work. And catching 300, I don't know how a guy would do that, but he caught 300 foxes, tied firebrands to their turned tail to tail and put a firebrand in the midst between two tails. And then he let them run over the cornfield and the vineyards and the olives, and everything was burned up. You see in verse 6, the Philistine said, who did this? And then the Philistines came up and burnt her and her father with fire. Verse 7, Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and he went down and dwelt on the top of the rock of Edom. Now you know what? He had already had a bad episode with this woman. But would he learn a lesson? No. And you know, over and over, there are some men that just keep repeating the same mistakes over and over. It seems like they never learn. And why is that? Well, I think it's because, and these are reasons given in the book, because strong men are still human, and human men make mistakes. But strong men also have blind spots. You know, all of us have blind spots. There's things that you just can't see that everyone else can see, but you can't see it. Remember the time that David went down to Nabal's house, and he sent servants actually down to Nabal's house and said, look, we've guarded your sheep all winter. Would you feed my 600 soldiers one meal? Remember that? And Nabal said, he said, you've broken away from your master, King Saul. I don't owe you a thing. How do I know you protected my sheep? I'm not going to feed you one meal. I'm not going to give you guys a bite. And then he laughed about it whenever he turned David. Well, and so the young men come back to David, and they said to David, David, you know what? He made fools of us. He mocked us. He said he wasn't going to fix a meal for you. And David said, okay, fellas, put on your swords. We're going to go down there, and we're going to kill every male. We're going to kill them all. In the meantime, Nabal's wife, Abigail, found out what Nabal had done. And she humbled herself and got a whole train of mules together, or asses together, with supplies. And she went up and pleaded with David. And she said, David, if you do this thing, if you kill Nabal, and Nabal is a fool, just like his name is, so is he. And that's what the word Nabal means. Matter of fact, Nabal is the Hebrew word for fool. And nobody denies he's a fool, and she was married to him. You have to remember that she didn't get to necessarily pick her husband. Husbands could buy a wife with a dowry. She might not have had a choice about marrying Nabal, but she said, as his name, so is he. I used to say, Nabal's my name and foolishness is my game. But she said, please accept these gifts and this food, and do not do something that you will regret later when you become king. Do you know what? Abigail saw something David didn't see that day. He saw that he would have killed innocent. She saw that he would have killed innocent men if he went through with this plan. And David realized, he listened to her counsel. He said, you have saved me from making a terrible mistake. You saw something I didn't see. Thank God for you. 3 days later, Nabal died, and David took Abigail to be his wife. She became one of eight of his wives. But what I want you to see is that David was one of those men who had a blind spot. And listen, if King David could have a blind spot, I could have a blind spot too. If King David could have a blind spot, you could have a blind spot too. That's why we need to listen to the counsel of others, because they may help us. Strong men tend to have untended spiritual weaknesses, and strong men tend to have too much pride. So, number one, strong men disregard boundaries. They struggle with lust. They ignore good advice. They break rules. They overestimate their cleverness. They tend to use anger as a tool, and they repeat the same mistakes. Here's number 8. Strong men tend to have big egos. In chapter 15, as you go on, for the sake of time, I'm not going to read this to you. I'm just going to tell you what happened. The Philistines were so angry with Samson that they began to invade Judah, and they began to burn villages and burn houses and kill Judahites. And so 3,000 men of Judah said, "This is all Samson's fault." So they found Samson living in a cave. And they said to Samson, "Listen, the Philistines are going to give us all kinds of trouble until we turn you over to them." Samson said, "Promise me that you won't hurt me yourself." Oh, they said, "We won't hurt you. We're just going to bind you and deliver you to them." He said, "Very well." And he allowed him to bind him. He even told him, he said, "Use such a kind of rope and tie me up tight." Because Samson knew all he had to do. Bear in mind, this is his big ego. He knew all he had to do was flex his muscles and the ropes would pop. And so he allowed himself to be taken captive and delivered to the Philistines. That is when he popped the ropes, took the jawbone of an ass, and killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of an ass. And when he was finished, he was thirsty, and he called out, and I don't remember if he actually prayed, but he looked, and he was without water, and water came out of a hollowed spot in the jawbone of this donkey. That might have been a second prayer. I don't remember. What I want you to see there is he had this big ego. What kind of guy is going to say, "Okay, well, I'm strong enough. You can bind me up and I'll break loose. I'm too big for you guys to, 3,000 of you, I'm too strong for 3,000 of you, and I'm too strong for 1,000 of them. So go ahead and bind me up. See what I care." And there's an ego there. What we see is that in pride, there's an absence of heartfelt worship. Can you find one episode where Samson actually got on his face before God and worshiped the Lord? Can you find one episode? In pride, there is foolishness. In pride, there's isolation. You know what? His own countrymen, 3,000 men of Judah, turned against him because his foolishness was actually putting them in danger. So pride is... it'll isolate you. And in pride, there's disappointment. Do you know, in pride, every time you get proud, you're going to end up disappointed before it's over. I forget what year it was, but Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs. And you know what he said when the year was over? He said, "Nobody will ever duplicate that feat." Arrogant pride. Nobody will ever hit 60 home runs. Well, just a few years ago, in 1960, I believe it was in 63 or 64, Roger Maris hit 61. And since then, Mark McGwire has done it, Sammy Sosa has done it, and Barry Bonds has done it. There's disappointment and pride. You think you establish some mark nobody will ever reach. You know what? Somebody will reach it one day. There's somebody bigger than you and somebody that's smarter than you who will come along, and pride is one of those things. An ego is one of those things that is bound to disappointment. Here's number 9. Strong men tend to take foolish risks. Look at chapter 16 in verses 1 through 3. "Then went Samson to Gaza and saw there an harlot and went in unto her. And it was told to the Gazaites," or the Gazites, "saying, Samson has come hither. And they compassed him and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning when it is day, we will kill him. And Samson lay till midnight and arose at midnight and took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and went away with them, bar and all, and put them up on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that is before Hebron." Now that's about, according to my calculation, about 40 miles away. I just carry him down to the holler and throw him in the nearest ditch. I mean, he carried the gates of the city and all of the bridge work of the gate, he carried it like 40 miles. He made a statement. What I want you to see is that was a foolish risk. He's risking. I mean, he laid there till midnight. He had to know. He had to know they got an army gathering outside. In the morning, they plan to kill me. I'm going to lay here for another hour. You know, there are some risks in life. that are unavoidable. You're going to have to take them. Every time you get in your car, that's a risk. You can't help it. It's an unavoidable risk. If you're going to get from here to there, you've got to get in a car, and you take a chance on some madman running you over and killing you. There are risks in this life that are unavoidable. Every time you start a car up, you're taking a risk. And then there are risks that are necessary, like a group of military brethren who realize that four or five of their buddies are pinned down. And it's a risk to go unpin them, but they have to do it. And it's not uncommon for military men, for 10 men, to risk their lives to save four. That's a necessary risk. And then there are calculated risks. You know, the doctor says to you, you know, you've got this tumor, and we're going to do this surgery, and there's a 50% chance you'll live and a 50% chance you'll not live. Well, you calculate the risk, and then you make your best decision. But there are some risks that are absolutely foolish. And what Samson did this night, in his mind, as seeing himself as a strong man, and listen, that's one thing about strong men. They see themselves as big men, strong men. And seeing himself as a big man, he said, I can lay here a little longer. I'm equal to the task. And it was a foolish risk. You know, guys like Evel Knievel have made all kinds of foolish risks in their life. 40-some bones broken in his body in a lifetime. None of those risks had to be taken. None of them were necessary. You might say some of them were calculated, but they were all foolish risks. Number 10. Okay, we've done big egos, foolish risks. Here's number 10. Strong men struggle with intimacy. In chapter 16, verses 4 through 20, we see the conversation back and forth between Samson and Delilah. I don't have time to go into that this evening. My time is getting too near finished, so I'm going to kind of skip over the reading of all of that scripture. But what happened is he teased her. He told her one thing. She said, what's the secret of your strength? What he didn't know is that she was being paid 1,100 shekels of silver per Philistine, which is a lot of money, in order to find out Samson's secret to his strength. To Delilah, Samson was the lottery ticket, the winning lottery ticket. And so she asked, what's the secret of your strength? He told her one thing, it wasn't that. She said, you didn't tell me the truth. He told her another thing, it wasn't that. Finally, after all of this teasing back and forth, he finally got tired of it. Look in verse 15. She says, how canst thou say I love thee when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times and hast told me wherein thy great strength and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, he told her all his heart. Now that is a telling statement. You know what? That's all intimacy is telling all your heart. Some people think that intimacy is the physical act of love between a man and a woman, particularly between a husband and wife. But there's lots of people that make physical acts of love and there's no intimacy involved at all, because the heart has never truly been revealed. You want to know what intimacy is? It's when a man tells her all his heart. And you know what, fellas, I'm going to tell you this. That's all most true women want out of life, is a husband who will tell her all his heart. But strong men struggle with that. So later he went ahead and he said, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I've been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. Notice this, and when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, and here he finally gets intimate with the wrong woman, a woman who's only after a meal ticket. Now, there's enemies of intimacy, I understand. Busyness, some guys are too busy. Ambition, some guys are too ambitious, too many cookies on the plate, too many things going on. Some men are impatient, that gets in the way of intimacy. Some are distracted, money can be a hindrance to intimacy. Attraction to the opposite sex can be a hindrance to intimacy. And even fatigue. Sometimes a guy has worked so hard he has nothing left to give. Let me give you three things about intimacy. Number one, It takes time to build true intimacy. It takes time. And there's such a thing as spending a lot of time together, but no intimate time. You know, my wife could come to the office and sit in the office all day and be my secretary, and we could spend 8 hours with each other and still have hardly been together. That's not the kind of time we're talking about. We're talking about time when you really tell each other your heart. It takes time. It takes two. It takes time. And thirdly, it takes trouble. You may have to go out of your way to make it happen. It usually doesn't happen accidentally. And that's a good point that we see in the book. Here's number 11. I'm going to have to hurry. I want to be done in about 5 minutes, so I'm going to give you these last two things pretty quickly. Number 11, strong men tend to take too much for granted. You know, after he gave the secret away about his long hair and she cut his hair and she woke him up, she said, "Samson, Samson, the Philistines are upon thee." Look at verse 20. She said, "Samson, the Philistines be upon thee." And he awoke out of his sleep and said, "I will go out as at other times before and shake myself." And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. You know what? He took too much for granted. He thought, "I'll always be strong. I'll always have my eyes. I'll always have my hair. I'll always have my wit. And I'll always have the Spirit of the Lord. After all, didn't God say that He was going to use me to defeat the Philistines? I'll always have that." And he didn't realize that it was one of those things that he could lose. He had taken for granted all of his life. He took for granted his parents. He took for granted his calling, his vow, his strength, his security, and his God. He took them all for granted. He assumed that he was always have the Spirit of God. I want to ask you, what are you taking for granted? You taking your wife for granted? You think you'll always have her? Your kids? Your job? Your health? Your finances? This fellow tells one simple story. He said there was a guy he knew that was always complaining about his office. He said, "I hate my office." He said, "I hate my job." He said, "I hate my boss. I hate the work I have to do. It's stupid work. They could hire a monkey and train a monkey to do my work." He said, "My computer's too slow." And he said, "The office air conditioning is insufficient." He said, "I just hate this." And then one day they served notice and said, "The company's been sold and this office is being closed down and you don't have a job anymore." And it took him like 3 months to find another job. And when he finally landed with another company, guess what? It was one of the competitors that was smaller than the company he had left. His office was smaller. His computer was older. But he was really glad to have a job. Strong men take things for granted. Number 12. Strong men lose sight of the big picture. They lose sight of the big picture. In Judges chapter 16, we find out that the Philistines come and arrest him. And you know what the first thing they did is they took his eyes out. They poked his eyes out. They took a red-hot sword and touched his eyes and put his eyes out. I find that kind of ironic because that was the very thing that Samson used to locate his next female target was his eyes. You know, if God is going to help a man to get over his temptation, that would sure be a way to take away his sight so that he couldn't see how pretty this gal was. But you know what? Samson there in the grist mill, they took him, they put his eyes out, they put him in a grist mill where he was working with the oxen to push around in a circle this big stone wheel that ground up the wheat. And day after day, Samson pushed this arm on this wheel, and he'd push around in a circle. And one day a holiday came, and they said, "Go get Samson. We want to make sport with him." And they brought him into the arena. But what the Philistines failed to realize is that his hair was going to begin to grow back. And the Bible tells us that his hair began to grow. Look at verse 22. "Howbeit the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven." His hair began to grow, and he began to get his strength back. None of the Philistines even thought that would ever happen. So here's Samson now. He's brought into the arena, and all of the Philistines are there, and they say, "Let's make sport of Samson. Let's see Samson perform some great feat of strength." And Samson asked this one little boy, blind as a bat, Samson says, "Show me to the two main pillars of the temple." And the boy brought him to the two main pillars, and he stood there and put his hands underneath them. And I want you to see verse 28. This is that I can remember the only time I've seen Samson pray. Samson called unto the Lord and said, O Lord God, remember me. I pray thee and strengthen me. I pray thee only this once. O God, may I at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood and on which it was borne up, one on the right hand, one on the left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might. And the house fell upon the Lord's and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew with his death were more than they which he slew with his life. But what I want you to know is he still failed to see the big picture. He didn't deliver Israel from the Philistines. He didn't organize Israel at all. He went through life enjoying himself. You know, I thought about this. Samson did not, it was not a heroic thing to kill himself with the Philistines. Samson was committing suicide. He couldn't deal with blindness. Samson was, he was committing suicide. He couldn't deal with embarrassment. By the way, neither can any other big, strong men deal with those things very well. He couldn't deal with defeat. And he couldn't deal with the loss of his freedom. Samson was willing to die because he didn't want to live the way he was. And so you know what he did? He chose to die selfishly just like he lived. And he died without delivering Israel. I want you to understand Satan has four tools that he uses to blind men to the big picture. I'll give you these four and I'm finished. Pleasure, that was Samson. Pleasure blinded Samson to the big picture. He went around just with little skirmishes here and there, but he never really organized Israel and delivered them from the Philistines. Samuel and David had to do that a couple of generations later. Not only does Satan use pleasure, he uses pain. That's how he blinded Job from seeing the big picture. He uses prosperity. That's how he blinded Demas of the New Testament. Demas hath forsaken us, having loved this present world. And he uses power. That's how he blinded King Saul in the Old Testament. So I give you these 12 things. And you know what? Most of us would not be guilty of all 12 of them. Most of us, as we go through the list, say, well, yeah, that one maybe and that one. But you know, one of these can really damper your usefulness for the Lord. Our job as men should be to find and realize the potential that we have to serve the Lord. And if one of these mistakes or one of these tendencies is holding you back from reaching your potential for Christ, then you need to deal with it. What I'm going to ask you to do is not so much respond to the message this evening, but I'm going to ask you to get the book. I really would like you to think about it. My wife went online last night. We can get them for $10 a piece. She has a clipboard, and everybody that comes by and says, I want a copy of that book, she'll order you one by faith that you'll pay $10 for it. By the way, we'll probably be out the postage a little bit. That'll cover part of the shipping, but not all. You know, God's men should be readers anyway. We should be readers. We should be reading books. We should read more books and watch less TV. We should read more books and play less games. We need to pay more attention to serious things in life. My urge, my challenge to you this evening is, fellas, get this book and read it. And you say, well, I'm not a good reader. Well, then, okay, let your wife read it to you like a bedtime story, one chapter a night. It'll do you and her both good. You say, well, you know what, we've struggled a little bit with intimacy. Well, you know what, that's a good place to start, is get your wife to read you a chapter of this book every evening. That'll give you some really intimate things to talk about before you go to sleep. Would you bow with me, please, for prayer?